seen anything like that.
I'm a very confident front runner for Caddy for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Fuck! God damn it!
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course you would. That's a particularly stupid question. It's the Irish Open. Of course you want to play at the weekend.
Well, it's that time again. Happy Christmas, golf fans. Now, we're coming to you a day later than usual and under less than ideal circumstances, more to be explained in a moment. But no one's really to blame. Well, I guess I am a little bit. I've been away and only got back this morning, which is why we're doing it today rather than yesterday. But here we are, Dave McIntyre and Gary Murphy, gathered as always.
Happy Masters Weeks, man.
Happy Masters Week. We have Gary, you've got some so you've had a personal issue, which meant that you're sitting in your car and trying to record this rather than the comfort of an office or the comfort of home. So look, we'll as they say, caveat emptor, buyer beware. Look, it is what it is. We're cobbled together with double-sided sticky tape today, it feels a little bit. But look, under any other circumstances, we might have had put our heads together and go, look, let's just do this tomorrow. But that would not be really done, given that I arguably this is the most important week of the golfing year. Because, of course, we are here to discuss dreams, hopes for Augusta. Let's kick off with, I want to kick off with this, right? So, John Carr of Carr Golf, he introduced Rory to the gathered press yesterday, and he, you know, he seemed in great spirits. He was making little jokes. The Champions Dinner, he was talking about the Champions Dinner, and then after the Champions Dinner, or he was saying something about like, oh, the menu, would it not be a little bit more Irish? And then he quips, you know, because I wanted to enjoy the dinner as well. Now, in, I don't know about you guys, but in my world, when all our WhatsApp groups, it all like, all the red alerts went up. Boom, 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 boom. How dare he? Irish food is amazing. And they started, like, I got all this trolling about, like, all these things he could have. I'm just going to give you, like, okay. So the three that I could pick out were bacon and cabbage, Culcannon and champ. So that's two kinds of mash. And bacon and cabbage. And then someone threw in.
Pick out of what?
As in, like, for what could have been better than the menu that he went for?
Well, if I was thinking of good Irish food, they are not the three things that would spring to mind first.
Well, spring lamb.
A rack of lamb, yes, beautifully cooked with some in some lovely sauce. Some good old Irish steak. Maybe some sort of a shepherd's pie, perhaps.
Which is English, but which is sure.
Cottage pie, would you not call that over in England? I don't
also
know.
In English? No. Cottage pie. Shepherd's pie is made with lamb. Cottage pie is made with beef.
My shepherd's pie is made with beef, so it must be a cottage pie. So, look, either way, anybody who got upset about it needs to think about more important things in life.
That's right. I thought it was funny. I was just like, lads alive, Jesus. Gary, if obviously you're of the three of us, you'd be the closest one now to picking a champion's menu. So, yeah.
How is he closer Guinness than you or I?
Guinness.
Gary has played as many Masters as we have.
That is true. And between us, we have zero green jackets. So,
and not likely to have one either.
No, that's true. I guess the point I'm trying to make here is that the overall tenor of Rory's press conference, unsurprisingly, was very, very different to the last 17 years, or maybe except for the first year when he was a rookie and had everything to live for and play for. But it just seemed free. And I liked that whole idea that he preferred that if the tournament never started, so he could continue enjoying the status of current champion. I have to say, I thought it was brilliant. I don't know what it means for his chances this week, but his general demeanor, his general tone said to me, this is a guy in a pretty good place.
It's amazing how different he is compared to the USPGA Championship, which is his first major after he had won the Grand Slam and won the Masters. So He does seem to be unbelievably relaxed. I think I actually eventually got to see that Rory show on Amazon Prime. And a big thing was he plays his best golf where he's kind of happy-go-lucky and he's bouncing around. So if that is the situation he finds himself in, his game is fine. He's had 3 weeks at home. He really should have a stout defense. And, you know, maybe he can do a Faldo and go back-to-back.
Only three players ever have gone back-to-back. Tiger, Faldo, Nicklaus.
Yeah. Only Faldo has back-to-back, having won it for the first time the previous year.
Oh, okay.
And I think he's only ever defended two tournaments, so his out of 41 wins either side. So his defending skills are not the Mae West, but this is a different vibe. And I do think he'll be quite aggressive this week. He was saying in the presser that he's got into trouble at times trying to be cute off the tee, so he might as well be further down in the trouble than laying back. So I think he'll, not that he'll go, you know, bald-headed at the thing, but I do think he'll enjoy the little bit of freedom he's afforded himself.
Dave, before you joined us, whatever it is, a couple of months ago, one of the things you'd said to me was that the thing you were most looking forward to was Rory chat around build-up to the Masters and observing how Rory was going to be in the build-up. So obviously, as a keen student of Rory's both body language and language, go on, give us your thoughts.
Yeah, he looks to be totally at peace with himself, to the point where I would, not going to write him off this week, but I have serious questions about how likely he is to contend this week. Like, as I said, Faldo is the only person in Masters history that has defended the Masters having won it for the first time the previous year. Like, there is something about this week for the first time winners that must feel surreal, especially if it's somebody who has been on the journey that McIlroy has been to get that green jacket on his shoulders for the first time. And I'd say he has just decided that this week is going only ever going to happen once in his life. If he wins the next 10 Masters titles, this week will only ever happen once. And he's going to soak up every second of it that he possibly can, try and elongate every moment as best he can, and involve as many people that he loves in his life in this week as best he can. And why wouldn't he? But I do think that has to take away from his ability to be a real contender. Now, you know, the switch could be flipped once he reaches the first tee and tomorrow and gets the par three contest out of his system today, and when everything else, all the ceremonial stuff has been put to bed and put behind him, that he is able to refocus and get himself fully tuned in. But if you think where he was in comparison to this time last year when he had won at the Players and he'd won at Pebble Beach and he was one of the informed players in the world, he's a world away from that. He was obviously fully focused, ravenously hungry to win. None of that's there now. So I would think if he's going to win another green jacket, next year is more likely than this year, but I wouldn't hold it against him one bit, because this is a once in a lifetime few days of a window for anybody in his shoes, and well, he might take everything he possibly can for it, no matter what the consequences for what might happen on course over the next 4 days might be.
I mean, because the other point, just to add to that point, is, has he been there since Saturday? And he said it himself, it's the first time, it's the earliest he's ever showed up at Augusta. And obviously he has the duties of a defending champ. He was at the par three. He was at the, he was doing a lot of the things that ordinarily he would never, ever be doing. I want to ask you, so let's just recap a little bit about his season thus far. So I think he started the season really, really well. He was runner-up at Riviera. Like, he seemed in control of his golf ball. He was shaping shots the way he saw them. Then he had those back spasms at Bay Hill. He was kind of a late arrival into the Players, and then hasn't teed it up since. So, I don't know, Gary, John Rahm, we'll talk about John Rahm in a minute, but John Rahm has said that he doesn't like to play the week before a major. He likes that rest. But for a guy who hasn't teed it up since the Players, ring rusty or raring to go?
I don't think rust is going to be a factor at all, because historically, if you look at him when he's had a break, an extended break, i.e. when he starts his season, he normally plays very, very well straight out of the bat. So, and he will be quite detailed in his preparation the last 3 weeks. I think maybe the first week was rest up his back and do his physio and do all that sort of stuff. And then he's, you know, obviously channeling his preparation into kind of last minute stuff, which, depending on the way your season has gone, that, you know, that can reference a lot of that. But the fact that he had a decent season to date, you can, you know, discount the Palmer and the players because he was kind of injured. So I think, and then aligned with the fact that he's coming in as defending champion and he's done the Grand Slam and everything that went with last year, it's probably the best prep he's had since 2011, you could nearly say.
Jeez.
So I don't have any... I don't buy, you know, that it's going to be ceremonial either, because once the gun goes Thursday morning, it's...
No, the build-up is all ceremonial. You know, he's had to do a lot more things than he would normally do. He's walking around, like, with... almost with his head in the clouds to some extent, because there's so much good stuff around being a first-time champion that can't pass you by.
Yeah, compared to, you know, the tension and anxiety of previous build-ups.
But,
so in theory, his fear and anxiety is not really focused either. But, you know, where is it going to be? I just need to turn it off the bunker on the first and let's go and play and see where it takes us. And that's kind of, and his dad alluded to that a lot. Like in 2011, in the final round, his body language is completely different to what his normal stuff is.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're seeing a kind of happy-go-lucky Rory here. And, you know, he literally has the wind in his sails. Yeah, totally. Like he could, you know, who knows? Because obviously, you can't really discount statistics at times on these things. I think he'll have a fine week. I really do.
And when you say a fine week, what do you mean? Like, what? Go on, give us your. Where do you see him?
Well, I think he'll be sniffing around the business end of the tournament. Okay. I really do.
If he gets his putting going, that's really let him.
He's actually
statistically playing as well as he was last year without the wins. Tee to green, shots gained to pro.
Yeah, totally. So,
okay. Well, I mean, obviously, it's his, like, although it was quite funny. Was it after the Masters last year? He's like, well, lads, what do you have to talk about next year? You know, I mean, before we get into who else is, let's just get it out of the way now. The absence of two of the greatest of champions. Obviously, Tiger Woods and also Phil Mickelson. It's the first time since 1994 that neither Mickelson or Woods are in the field. And Mickelson has a personal family health issue, and Tiger Woods has his own issues, which we won't get into. But what was interesting is that it's almost, this is being declared as the passing of the guard. They are yesterday's news. To which my response is, but haven't they kind of been yesterday's news for quite a while?
Yeah, the guard was passed.
That's what I would have thought, yeah.
Really? Certainly, maybe 3 or 4 years ago. Obviously, both have won majors in the last 7 seasons, so they're not yesterday's men in that regard, but both of those major championship wins, Woods at the Masters 19 and Mickelson in the PGA Championship 5 years ago, were out of the blue. I think it's the first time in, what, over 30 years that neither have been in the field. I used to always love seeing Mickelson in the field because you never quite know what he's going to deliver. He goes on these little runs on a Friday or a Saturday where he plays Amen Corner and then the back nine and four or five under. And there's this old field of Mickelson's on the charge at Augusta National. And that, how much pleasure has that brought fans of the Masters down the years? I mean, we're well used to Tiger not being up at Augusta, so that's nothing new, really. I won't really miss the fact that they're not in the field at all.
I have to say, nor will I. And not because, like, obviously, like, as sports fans, we're mercenary in that, like, eaten bread is soon forgotten. And, like, go on, Gary, sorry.
I think the problem with Tiger, Fiona, is if he had turned up to play, He hasn't played a golf tournament in 2 years. They would have shown every bloody shot regardless of.
And it would have been a shambles.
And it would have been, you know, and so I think it's sad that they weren't there for dinner last night.
Yeah.
You know, because obviously, they, you know, they're both going through difficult times off the golf course, and we wish them both very well. But golf-wise, they're, you know, they're no loss, really. Because
no, and I think that's it. Ultimately, again, you know, you're absolutely right. Look, they both are going through difficulties, very different kinds of difficulties, but still, that notwithstanding. But from a golfing perspective, they're irrelevant. And look, someone who isn't irrelevant is the world number one, although it's the weirdest slump. I've been seeing it described as a slump, lads, a slump. Okay. And what makes the story of Scheffler interesting is that nobody's really talking about him. You know, he's still world number one, hasn't finished outside the top 25 since the 2024 BMW Championship. He's already got a win this season. You know, and then he was tied 24th at Bay Hill, 22nd at the Players. And these have been framed as disappointments for an elite ball striker. And his irons just haven't been quite at the exalted levels of the last 2.5 years. And so as a result, it's almost as though it's like, I don't know. Everyone's cooled off on Scotty. Have you guys cooled off on Scotty?
No, I wouldn't. I haven't cooled off on him at all. And it's just, you know, his preparation. His wife had another boy.
That's true. Yeah.
Baby last week. He hasn't played since the Players either. And I'm sure he's probably not practiced a huge amount either. So, and he's famous for saying it's all about his preparation for tournaments. He wants to be ready to go. But he's a phenomenal player and he's a phenomenal competitor. So I think he will compartmentalize and maybe it might frame up a little bit. Maybe he was working on too much stuff. He undoubtedly was trying to change a couple of things in his swing. He might go back to basics this week. And listen, he's trying to win it for the third time in 4 years. So yeah. His course form is undoubted, and he's the best player in the world by a mile when he's on. And in golf, it's all about weeks. So if Scotty opens up nice and tidy, that fear factor is back straight away. He might be a little bit more apprehensive because his prep hasn't been right. And for a player of his caliber, that's only just going to narrow and focus his mind even more. So, you know, he's definitely sniffing around. There's no denying that.
I mean, regardless, Dave, aside from the fact that obviously he's got a new member of the family, so that's a massive distraction, obviously. But his iron play hasn't been as sharp. And Augusta is a second shot golf course. If your irons aren't dialed in, you're going to struggle. But if the irons come back, or as if he finds what we know he can do with those irons, then Gary mentioned it. Third Masters title, fifth major before the age of 30, and all of a sudden those kind of quiet top 25s, you know, 22nd, 24th, become kind of more of a prelude than a problem.
Yeah, look, he's still going to be most people's favourite coming in.
You think? Yeah.
I think so, just because of how good he is around Augusta. Now, if you look at his shots gained across the season, they still look pretty impressive, but shots gained approach, he's ranked 23rd of the PGA Tour. So that's way below his standards when it comes to the sort of iron play that you're talking about. And shots gained around the green, he's 55th on the PGA Tour. And if he's going to win around Augusta, if anybody is going to win around Augusta, we know what they have to be able to produce around the green when they find themselves a little out of position, when they have to get up and down for some pretty awkward spots. And obviously putting is of vital importance. But I just wonder, there's been a lot going on with him. He's had stuff going on at home, as Gary has alluded to. And again, from what we were saying about McIlroy, I just wonder if he gets to Augusta now, it's a week on from the birth of the baby, or a week or so, and maybe he can start to really focus as well in a place where he's totally comfortable, where he's already won twice, where he's got a brilliant record. And he just might find that when he makes the drive down Magnolia Lane, it just seems to have an effect on certain people, and that they can bring pretty average form to Augusta and and produce it. And we've seen so many players down the years just being able to turn it on when they get there, because it is a shot maker's golf course. It's a golf course that suits the eye of certain players. And if you've got good memories of the place, it just seems to really like calm you down and settle you down. You can go around and you can enjoy playing and see where you find yourself come Saturday afternoon when it comes to maybe get yourself into contention for a run at a title on a Sunday. For me, what makes this Masters stand out a little is that there is no standout story coming into it. Like, if you look at the previous years, Rory was all about the Grand Slam last year and he was the best player form-wise going into the tournament. Scheffler in 2024 was red hot, and it was no surprise that he won by four strokes. John Rahm was the best player in the world and the favourites of the vast majority of people going into the championship in 2023. And Scheffler was in a very similar place the year before that. Like, the last championship that was probably as open as this one seems to be was when Hideki won in 2021.
Yeah.
And I love the fact that you can't really point at someone and go, well, look, it's him versus the field, as it was with Scheffler a couple of years ago, as it has been with Tiger so many times in the past. You could make an argument for 20, 25 guys this week. There aren't as many of the old fogies in the field as they used to be. There, and where you could, I mean, Jack used to always say that the Masters by distance was the easiest tournament of the year to win, because he could discount pretty much 60% of the field before they even put a tee in the ground on a Thursday morning. Don't think this year's Masters is like that. There's a lot of new guys like the Jacob Bridgmans of this world who were playing brilliant golf. And yeah, he's a rookie, so it's unlikely that he'll do what Zeller did all the way back in 79. But I am fascinated to see what the leaderboard looks like starting Saturday afternoon, because if I was looking to put my money on someone this week, I've no idea who I'd be favouring.
So to that very point, Gary, I mean, I take Dave's point. It's an open field. And it's also, as we're pointing out, I think it's one of the smallest Masters fields for a while. 92 players. John Rahm is consistently the best golfer in the world right now in terms of in total strokes gained. He leads regardless of whatever tour. He won in Hong Kong, hasn't had a finish outside the top five in any event he's played in. If I had to pick a guy that would, for me, most likely to be putting on a green jacket at the end of the week, Rahm is my man. Tell me I'm crazy or whatever.
Not at all. He's a former champion. He's a US Open champion. He's, you know, a phenomenal player. He had a great Ryder Cup. He started well on LIV this season. He's familiar with the qualities needed to win around here. So, of course, you know, it's if you take your LIV hat off, you know, if he was doing what he's doing on the PGA Tour, he's a single-figure price-wise. So, definitely, he's... And as Dave was saying, that's the exciting thing this year. They're like, there's a lot of guys. There's a, you know, and there'll be many pretenders until probably mid-Saturday afternoon, and then we'll get, more of a read on it. But I do, you know, there's loads. Like, Matt Fitzpatrick has won. Rob McIntyre was great last week. JJ Spawn, who was phenomenal last season.
And he struggled won.
He struggled with a little bit of the I'm US Open champion. And then he comes back and wins again last week. So, you know, Gary Woodland's a US Open champion who wanted to get in here. There's lots of guys with form. I think Xander Schauffele will be one of the picks for me. I like the way he's trending. He was exceptionally good a couple of years ago and had a little bit of a blip just because of expectation and golf and whatnot. And he won the end of last season. He's been top four his last two starts. And he wouldn't be afraid of it. You're always trying to look at someone who is not going to be afraid of it coming down the stretch. And there are many of them. So I think we're in, you know, we're in store for a fabulous week. Mm-hmm. And hopefully... I presume we'll have a watch along on Sunday morning.
Like, we are. I just can't wait. Around 2 o'clock.
I can't wait for that, because we'll have a better idea. And there's no doubt there's going to be a couple of younger players in with the sniff, because there's a lot of them playing very well. And the burning question is if there's some experienced campaigners alongside them and major winners, you know, who can find. I don't know. I just have a sneaky for someone this week who hasn't won a major, going very, very close.
Dave, I'm going to do some amateur mind reading, and you know what I said about Ram, I'm sure you're like, yeah, but that was only on live, so it doesn't really. But do you know the point I'm making here is this is a guy. He was, to use Gary's words, is trending very much in the right direction. He is red hot. He's won before. He is a multiple major winner. He knows how to win against the best players in the world. He seems to have parked the indifferent form of, was it last year, the year before? He's put that behind him. Like, would Ram whet your appetite?
Yeah, he would. He is playing well. He's playing consistently well. He's driving the ball as well as he has done in a long time as well. And he's obviously a brilliant player around Augusta. And if it was a lot of other tournaments, that comment you made rather flippantly about Liv and trying to get into my mind on that particular issue would be accurate. But I just think it's different for the Masters. And even if you just look at the performance of the Liv players at the Masters in recent years, it's been pretty good. Like Koepka's gone close, Mickelson has gone close. DeChambeau was in the final group last year. Obviously, had a very bad last day alongside Rory McIlroy. But I mean, if you're going to talk Ram, you have to talk Bryson, who's won the last two tournaments. And
Yeah, let's talk Bryson. I mean, he beat Ram in the playoff. But like at Augusta in 2024, he led early and then kind of drifted away. And then, as you said, like he was in the final group last year. It had a pretty shitey 75 that just blew him out of contention. And like he's in form. He's playing well. But the history at Augusta suggests that he's still trying to figure the place out, like
yeah,
so
I
many
was going to
are.
ask Gary, like, he's clearly good enough to put himself into contention around Augusta because he's just so long.
Yeah,
He's got a
absolutely.
brilliant short game. But has he improved, Gary, in the areas that he needs to improve on the evidence of the final day last year for him to go that bit further and actually win a green jacket this time around? Because no one has ever really suggested that he has the game, the all-round, nuanced, completed game that is required to win on that golf course. Yes, he can bludgeon a US Open course to death.
Yeah.
And if the conditions are right, you could see him shooting a seriously low score at an Open Championship or a PGA Championship. Has he got the skills to win around Augusta? Doesn't
Well,
like hitting
that was
balls
all.
left to right.
Yeah, that was always the big thing on McIlroy, that he was such a precocious talent and didn't quite have the guile with his wedges over the years. And we had a pain in our face listening to Rory McIlroy, the critics on his wedge play and stuff. But a lot of it made sense to a certain extent. And Bryson's in a similar category with regards to mid irons, ball flight control. He's predominantly a drawer of the ball, really. And when you've got very few flat lies around here, so you need a lot of different kind of shots. Does he have all those shots? He still hasn't answered those questions. The way he won in Pinehurst is inconceivable for him to win around here with that kind of golf. It's a lot more precision based. I do like his chances because he's such a warrior. He, as I was kind of saying earlier, he's certainly not going to fear it. But whether he has that tiny little bit of guile, his game is not made up for that. As you were saying, a US Open or a PGA. So he has questions still to answer. And then there's his own questions of the fear factor of that. How can he play around? Because this happens with all these players. They're going to have certain parts of their game in a week that aren't where they want them to be. Can you sneak around that? Will the questions get asked that you can't answer? And that's what's fascinating about DeChambeau. But the other side of DeChambeau is he opens up with 5 or 6 under and 4 or 5 under, and you're going, well, maybe he could run away with this. So he's a very exciting proposition. Can he, turn this place into a par 67? I'm not sure, but he does have the, if everything clicks for him, which, listen, there's 20 guys, if it clicks with him this week, they can all win, and that's what makes it interesting. But there are still questions he needs to answer.
I don't want him to win this weekend, Phil, but I can't wait to watch him.
Oh, he's going to be great. I'm just going to say, Gary, I appreciate that you're going to have to leave us now in a few minutes because you have to attend to a personal matter. But before you do go, you talked about first time winners. We all know Fuzzy Zeller. I mean, there are three, but the first two, like Gene Sarazen won the second one, and then your man that nobody can remember won the first one, so they don't count. But so
Horton
really,
Smith.
What?
Horton Smith.
Very good, Horton Smith. Well done, Gary. So obviously there's this kind of Fuzzy Zeller 1979 just kind of sitting there and hasn't been touched for 47 years. In 2020, Sungjae Im came close. Then Will Zalatoris came close in 21. Ludwig Åberg came close a couple of years ago. But you think there are players that the likelihood of a first-time winner is higher this year than previous years?
Well, the kind of, I think Bridgman and Gutterup are very interesting. Gutterup won in Scotland last year and then turned up in Portrush and kind of played. And I have it, he played the Open like it was just another event. I think there is a bit of that for some of these guys where, you know, someone's been back 10 or 11 years. There's a lot of fear factor. They know where all the damage is that can be done. They're so well prepared nowadays. So I think sometimes, I could be wrong on this, but sometimes ignorance can be bliss. That's kind of where DeChambeau could get lucky if he just slashes it around and puts his eyes out, which he's very capable of doing. But I just think Bridgman, he's leading the FedEx and he's, you know, if you want to have a Euro on it, he's 70-1 or something. When was the last time the leader of the FedEx at Augusta was 70-1? He's won the Genesis. There's a good synergy between those two tournaments, and Gutterup is quite fearless. So I fancy them to, you know, definitely have a good, solid charge at a top 10 and have a really good week. And Matt Fitzpatrick is another who I don't think will fear it at all. But of all those kind of contenders, Schauffele would be kind of the one I'd be sweetest on. And then, like, there's so many of them, but if Rory just turns up super relaxed, he's capable of going bananas for 4 days and going, well, you know, I actually played rubbish in the final round last year and I still won. And, you know, if I can be myself. So I just think the storylines are enormous. I wish we could fast forward to 2 o'clock on Sunday.
I know.
And have a better read on it. But it's hopefully set for a spectacular week.
The one thing I will say, though, Dave, is that nothing quite compares to recent experience. And so all 10 of the Masters champions of the past decade had at least one top 15 finish in a major the year before. So, like, you go back to Danny Willett, he finished sixth at the 2015 Open. Patrick Reed, Woods, like, they all finished runner-up at various majors the year before they won their green jacket. So there's 20 players literally just eliminated right there, you know, players who didn't perform well in the majors last year who are teeing it up this week.
Someday a rookie is going to win at Augusta, but it's so hard to see it happening this year. Like, of all golf courses, like, veterans of the place, you might get the impression they're not being 100% sincere and there's a little bit of lip service being paid to the old stories of, you know, the ghosts of Masters past and the shadows lurking around Eamon Corner, and you have to know where not to put it. But there has to be some substance to all of that chat that crops up on an annual basis. And to look at the list of 22 rookies this year, obviously some of them are amateurs, and try and pick one out that you expect to contend in a major for the very first time and go and win this weekend, it seems really far-fetched. When there are so many grizzled veterans who are not over the hill in the field. So if you look at guys like McIlroy, Scheffler, Rahm, Matsuyama, there's four guys straight away who are still close to being at the peak of their powers, who we would talk up as being potentially among the favourites this week. they have so much experience banked. They've got the feeling of what it's like to win on the Sunday at Augusta. And then you're talking about brilliant major champions like Matt Fitzpatrick, Brooks Koepka. It just feels so unlikely that there's going to be somebody, Schauffele's another, that will come from that list of 22 guys and will beat all of those other guys.
Yeah. So that, like, unfortunately, that eliminates the likes of Marco Penge, our own Tom McKibben, Sami Valimaki, all players who, in their own right, are playing some terrific golf. And, you know,
I think, Fiona, it's kind of,
Gary, you think it's far more likely.
Oh, totally. Yeah. But I kind of, it's not, if you look at it as not quite a rookie who's going to win this week, but maybe someone's going to win this week who hasn't won a major. I kind of mix that in with, you know, obviously there's only three or four of them playing the first time, but, you know, I wouldn't be shocked at all to see a first time major win this week.
Like a Cam Young.
That's kind of more.
Or a Min Woo Lee.
Yeah, Cam Young. Yeah, Siwoo Kim is really interesting as well. Sungjae Im loves it around here as well. The weather is set pretty fair. It's a bit, little blowy Thursday morning, not crazy, and it's dry all week. So I just think it's set for absolutely fascinating. And it's the first major. For guys that have won majors, they apply a lot of pressure on themselves going into the first major. And some of them can, the ones that have not, you know, can turn up and smell the azaleas and just go with the flow and see where it takes them.
You can do, so that Jack Nicklaus thing is like, before it starts, I've eliminated 60 odd players. So you can eliminate 2/3 of the field before the first tee shot has been. And like there's, and you know, and obviously lots of people write about it in such a way as you can find the metrics. There's the rookies, there's the age issue. So this is the 40th anniversary of Jack's 86 win. And he's the oldest winner ever of the Masters. You know, like there's loads of like different pedigrees that can eliminate like 60 odd players. Yeah. But the one of them is kind of in terms of driving. And obviously McIlroy, Scheffler, Dustin Johnson, Garcia were very good drivers of the ball, averaging around one strokes gained off the tee when they won. So look, we know that driving well opens up the rest of your game. One of them who perhaps would struggle a little bit compared to these guys with the driver, but I still think is a good shout for, well, an each way bet is Justin Rose. I know he's 40, so he's in that age. He's affected by age, but Jesus Christ. I mean, like, he can make a legitimate argument for being very unlucky last year.
Yeah, but he's 40, but he's 40, but he's in showroom condition, you know, and he's wily and he's as hard as nails and he won't fear it either. You know, Justin Rose is nearly always on your coupon for Augusta. So, and he's won already this year. I know he's slacked off a little bit since he won at Torrey Pines. And maybe that's not a bad thing either. He'll, you know, get back to brass tacks this week and just do what he does. He'll show a huge amount of patience Thursday, Friday. That's what nicks, you know, some of the rookies and the first timers or the dreamers. Thursday, Friday, he won't fall into that trap in any shape or form. So, yeah, you'd have to love, you know, and then the bounce of the Ryder Cup last year. We're getting a few Americans. I think we've a few Europeans. Rob McIntyre is a totally different player nowadays. So very, very strong.
Sorry, I like Rob McIntyre. I like Rob McIntyre.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And he's a lefty. I know he's more of a drawer, but lefties like it around here.
Yeah.
In recent times, they've probably won as many multiple winners with Bubba and Phil and man, I know Mike Weir only won once. But the thing, I played with Mike Weir actually in the Open the year he was Masters champion.
And
he's just so tidy and precise and putting. I actually asked him, could I have his putting stroke, which he wasn't willing to give to me. But yeah, you can just see that detail. So, and when your nerves are jangling at their very most, that's what's the tiny bit of guile you're going to need along with power. So whoever has that's going to be our winner.
Dave, I'm looking at Rose. So Rose has led, he's had five first round leads at Augusta. He's had three runner-up finishes, including two playoff losses to Sergio and to Rory. Like, Jesus Christ. Like, has there been another player who's done as much as he possibly can without actually getting over the finishing line as J-Rose?
Yeah. Greg Norman.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Greg. But that guy.
The two feelings around the two golfers and how they're perceived around Augusta could not be more different.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like, Rose has not thrown a Masters away.
No.
He played himself in that playoff last year with outrageously good golf on the Sunday. Came from nowhere, really. I mean, McIlroy was only had only eyes for DeChambeau and almost got caught by Rose coming up the rails. And the two guys who've beaten him in those playoffs have been sentimental favourites. Like Garcia, he'd not won his major and he'd come close so many times. And I remember being delighted for Garcia at the time in 2017. Now he's done an awful lot to blot his copybook in the meantime.
Yeah.
If he was standing over a putt to win the Masters this Sunday, I certainly wouldn't be shouting for him. But, and then obviously McIlroy in the Grand Slam and the whole Augusta National story last year. But if somebody other than McIlroy is to win this week, if I wanted them to wear a green jacket, it would be Rose. I would love to see him.
Yeah, me too. I have to say I'm with you there. I would love
brilliant
to see
guy.
Rose.
Seems so nice. The way he's reacted and carried the defeat in 2017 and 2025, like even if you watch the two documentaries that McIlroy was part of this week, the one on YouTube that is just an Augusta National one, which I loved, and I obviously watched the one on Amazon. He's spoken both about the reaction of Justin Rose to losing those two playoffs to Garcia and to McIlroy, and he just seems like a really classy fella who's 13 years on from his only major win, showing the old guys what's possible, still winning at the PGA Tour, still competitive, still as long as he ever was. He's 16-1, and there's a lot of guys courting favoritism ahead of him. But of all the guys this week who I really hope to see in contention on Sunday and maybe get it done, it's him.
Mm. Gary, I appreciate that the clock is against us for your own.
Yeah.
But can we just have a word about Shane? Like, we haven't mentioned him once. Where do we see him?
I think the start's key for him. It's such a hard course to chase on. So they're all in that position of trying to break 70 the first day, regardless of what the lead in is, even if someone goes mad. So, you know, it's there in front of him. His buddy won it last year. Corey Carrington won in Carnoustie and opened the floodgates for a couple of years. I know we're a little thinner on the ground nowadays, but gosh, he has to embrace what's in front of him. And, you know, form at times is temporary in golf too, and people can get very hung up on. He's done okay around here. It's a place that he's growing into. It's a privilege to be there this week, and he's got to see it that way and just go off and be himself. And hopefully he can, like all of them, John, you know, get off to a decent start and get the juices flowing and stay out of your way. Like, that's kind of all what they're hoping for. So, and Shane is no different. I know there's a bit of scar tissue going on, but there's going to be unbelievable tension coming down the stretch. Regardless, if he had won five times coming into this week, he's still going to be under the gun coming down the stretch Sunday afternoon. So, you know, and those little mini defeats, you can stick in a box. It doesn't matter. If he gets in contention on Sunday, he's playing fantastic. And that's the way he's got to see it and read it and play it.
Mm. Lads, I'm going to get your picks for your short odds bet and your outsider. And before I do, like I always, with Augusta, obviously, and we've been covering the Masters on the podcast, you know, obviously since the day we started this. So I always feel like there's very little I'm ever going to learn about Augusta. Like, you know, I've done all the reading, except for this week. I tell you what I found out. So Augusta is the first place, one, to introduce rope lines to control crowds, which I think is amazing, given that, you know. But then this is the thing. On-course scoreboards where red numbers are for under-par scores and green numbers for over-par scores, which are now like ubiquitous in every golf course all the time. But they were first introduced at Augusta. Did you guys know that?
Did not.
There you go. Okay, so before we get your picks, I'm going to throw four sleepers at you, all right, and see if it bites or not. Patrick Reed, Augusta specialist, who's trending again. Four top 10s in the last six starts here. Minwoo Lee, who is more consistent, and Corey Connors, an elite ball striker who's had four top tens in the last six Masters, and Sung Jae Im, because when he makes the cut, he can contend. Do any of those float your boat at all?
If any of those guys
yeah.
win, I'm going to be
yeah.
so disappointed.
Go on. Gary, you're more.
I like the two Koreans. I really do.
Well, Minwoo Lee's Australian, by the way.
Or sorry, I thought you said Siwoo Kim as well.
No. Sung Jae Im and Minwoo Lee. Corey Connors.
If we're looking for hateful winners for Dave, I'll stick Siwoo Kim in there as well. I think Zach Johnson will do something, not in the winner's market, but like he's too wily. He's playing great again on the Champions Tour. He'll be buoyed. He finished eighth last year. He's 400-1. His ultimate Hail Mary. But not in an outright market. I really like Jacob Bridgman to have a good, solid week. I think top 20-wise, he's an outstanding watch. And Xander Schauffele is my pick of the
So he's
of
your
the
pick.
Shorties.
Xander is your pick.
He's my pick of the shorties, along with Fitzpatrick.
Okay, so Dave, who's your short odds pick and who's your long shot?
My longer guys are Reed and Bridgman. I'd be surprised if they don't finish in the top 10 or top 12. I mean,
yeah.
A lot of places are paying out 12 spots if people are fancying a flutter over the next few days. My pick to win the Masters is Rose.
Oh, nice. I mean, that'd be nice. I mean, we agree. Like, if he did win, that would be, yeah, I think that would be a great story. My long odds is Patrick Reed. My short odds is John Rahm. That's what.
Good. Wouldn't this, yeah. There's many to choose from.
Just to let you know, lads, Gary, you've mentioned it a couple of times. We're going to be live with Shane Ryan at 2 o'clock Irish time on YouTube. So Brona, our long-suffering producer, poor woman, has had to deal with the amount of nonsense from the whole lot of us over the last few days. She's going to put the link into the Discord channel. So if you we'll have just before the round kicks off on Sunday, we'll have Shane Ryan, I presume live from Augusta, so he's there so he can give us like a flavor of the course. But in the meantime, look, once again, I can only apologize for the pod coming at you this late stage. As I said, it's down to me. I was traveling, so just couldn't get done otherwise. But Gary, listen, I appreciate the tough circumstances having to do this from the car. So cheers for that, mate.
Hey guys, thanks for
going down on your trip on a quieter week.
Sorry. Yeah. We'll wait for Gary, because Gary's going to the same destination to play in the Legends Tour at the end of the month. So I'd be interested. I was in Barbados. That's where I was, Dave.
Yes. Well, I look forward to getting the nitty gritty.
Yeah, the golf absolutely. Played a good bit of golf, and it was very, very nice. I have to say, it was quite the trip. But I'll do a deep dive into golf in Barbados and the overall experience on another week.
And you need to get a lot of sleep now to make sure you're physically and emotionally recovered and prepared for day one of the US Masters.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh yeah, today actually is my birthday as well, believe it or not.
Happy birthday.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
You were born in Masters week.
Maybe
not every year, but...
Not every year, but yeah, generally speaking, my birthday always kind of hits around Masters. Well, it's the first week in April, so I'm born in the 8th of April, so yeah. And it's always, and obviously at home where my wife wouldn't be as in love with the idea of the Masters as I am, I will admit that I have on occasion used my birthday as a way of leveraging TV right time to go, come on, it's my birthday present. I'm going to sit and watch the Masters.
That's right. That you'd be behaving in the exact same way if you were born in December as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Like it's my half birthday. It's my half birthday. Come on. listen, Dave, as always, thanks very much. And sure, look, we'll catch you again. Are you, you'll be joining us on Sunday?
I hope to be, yes.
Good man. Perfect. All right. Talk to you then. Starter kit right here.